morning, Emmanuel.
Good morning.
For those that I don't know, or that don't know me, my name is Sandy Kester. And 9 years ago, next week, my husband of 32 years was killed in a motorcycle accident. That was life-changing, as I had been married since I was 19 years old, and I was 50 then, and my birthday would be within a week of his death. I struggled along in my grief for a year and a half before deciding to come to IBC here, and because I was a member of another church, and take the Significant Woman class that Enid Walker and Pat Ross were teaching. Pat suggested that I get connected to Grief Share. I had never heard of Grief Share, and she connected me with a friend who was a leader at another church. I went that very next week and loved it. Felt at home in Grief Share, but they were getting ready to end their cycle, so they suggested I go to another close church in Alexandria to take their 13-week biblically-based Grief Share cycle as it was getting ready to start. It was so impactful that I took the cycle again at the original church, and then I took the leader training, and I joined the lead team there of that original church back in the fall of 2019. I have now been the lead facilitator at three different churches, all while attending at IBC, and I joined IBC in 2017, and have been the facilitator here at IBC's program since the fall of 2022. And it is a joy and privilege to walk alongside of folks as they heal in their grieving process. So this class will focus on how we can learn to come alongside others during their grieving process. I do not have the perfect answer to every question or every situation, but I have heard enough scenarios from others throughout these years of Grief Share to know that people want to be helpful and to say beautifully, spiritually uplifting words, but sometimes the things that we say can hurt and be painful. I call it, we're trying to put on our spiritual Band-Aid. Okay, there we go. Okay, now I need help. Sorry. We put on our spiritual Band-Aid. I will be sharing some information here and some scenarios and conversations that might be beneficial to others. Can you go back? It's the Band-Aid picture. I'm seeing the other big one. Sorry.
That's the next one.
Yeah, computer isn't me. I only use them because I have to. So we'll be sharing some information and scenarios and conversations that might be beneficial to others during the grieving process. But first, I'm going to share with you what physically happens to us when we grieve. And I'm not talking about like feeling sad because you had an acquaintance or a coworker that passed away. We're talking about what Webster's definition of grief say. It's mental suffering or distress or affliction over loss, sharp sorrow, and painful regret. For example, I lost my mom when I was 18 and my father 4 years later. But looking back, I did not grieve them as much as I did my husband, since we had been married for 32 years and I was just a child bride, as I said. So I was totally a different person when he died than when we were first married. And no one told me that grief was a literal pain in my body. No one told me the things that I'm going to tell you about how true grief affects us physically and emotionally, as I believe I truly hadn't grieved my parents' death like I did my husband. Before I tell you that, so hopefully if you chose to pick up a handout sheet, I'll tell you the pages that we're on where the notes correspond. And there's some also blank notes in the back if you want to take other notes. So let's begin. Okay. This is on the page, what grief does to us physically and emotionally. Number one, it affects your brain. Your brain experiences changes to your amygdala, which triggers the fight, flight, or freeze response, which is why a griever may experience getting angry more or feeling like they want to scream or like they want to run away versus talking to you about their loved one. High levels of cortisone are streaming, which affects the hippocampus, which is responsible for the storage and retrieval of memories. The number one complaint of grievers, and I have some friends here from my grief share class so they could back me up about this. Number one complaint of grievers is lack of concentration or remembering anything, which is called grief fog. But months or years later, maybe the griever may have a smell memory or hear a song, and they're right back to the beginning of their grief. This is called a grief ambush, where something triggers you, even years later, of remembering your loved one and you're standing in the grocery aisle just blubbering over a jar of pickles, because it brings that grief ambush. Smells go into the limbic system, which goes to our amygdala, which is our brain's region relating to emotion and memory. Number two, it affects our heart. Stress may cause cardiomyopathy. When the heart muscle becomes weakened or stunned in response to grief, it may mimic a heart attack or a panic attack. There truly is something called broken heart syndrome. When the left ventricle becomes enlarged and doesn't function, which leads to temporary increase of blood flow and temporary decrease in heart function. It may be because of a sudden surge in adrenaline, which prevents the left ventricle from properly contracting. This is generally temporary, but it can lead to broken heart syndrome. Grandpa Kester, they were married for 71 years, and Grandpa Kester died May 1st. Grandma Kester died May 30th. We all said she died of a broken heart. She didn't want to be with that grandpa. Number three are tears. There are three types of tears. Number one, the basal tears. It's moistened and lubricates the eye. They are clear, thin tears. Number two, reflex tears. They contain substances that help to clear irritants, and it contains water, electrolytes, and enzymes. By the way, all this medical stuff, I had to research. I did not make this up, and I did not know this. I had to find out about myself what was going on. Number three, emotional tears. They come about for a wide range of reasons. They contain high levels of stress hormones. People have the wrong idea about crying and mourning, thinking that it's a sign of weakness or a wrong response to a situation, and so they try to suppress their grief. But they have many benefits, the tears. They are triggered through our parasympathetic nervous system, which helps us relax. Also, shedding tears releases oxytocin and endorphins, which are chemicals that ease physical and emotional pain. So tears actually can be God's natural painkillers. They're like our pressure cooker. They release. Number four, in our immune system. Oops, there's my tears. Here's my immune system. When we are grieving, it is thought that the stress hormone cortisol is increased and that your body's own lymphocytes, which is like our body's natural killers of bad stuff, is decreased, which means we're not creating antibodies in response to infection. So possibly that griever may get sick more frequently. Appetite. Grief can alter the body's production of hormones that regulate our appetite and our metabolism. It may make it more difficult to eat or even enjoy food. The increase in cortisol, which affects the hypothalamus, can lead to overeating or the opposite, nausea, stomach aches, loss of stomach function, loss of taste, and loss of smell. Also, sleep. This is the one that has affected me mostly. Grief leads to a state of hyperarousal, a state of alertness, racing thoughts, worries, mental and emotional issues, which interfere with our natural sleep cycles and waking cycles. This could lead to headaches, muscle tension, stomach issues. So grief really does affect us emotionally. Now, this is not part of our notes, but here are some scenarios that you may have run into yourself if you have had to grieve your loved one. This is what people say, but maybe they shouldn't. For example, people may say, "I know how you feel." No, you don't. You probably may have a totally different set of circumstances than they do. Maybe your loved one was saved and theirs were not, or you had a good relationship with your parents and they didn't. So they're grieving that they no longer have time to reconcile with their parents. Or maybe you're financially set and they never held a job outside of the home and their loved one had no insurance to support them financially. I know of a woman that her husband, she never worked outside of the home, and her husband worked for Giant for close to 40 years, but he was one of those who just never filled out paperwork and never filled out the paperwork for pension and life insurance. So he died suddenly, and she was left destitute. So she had to get court involved to help her, and in her late 60s, she had to go to work for the first time as a school bus driver. So can't imagine, you know, wanting to do that if you don't have to. And so, yeah, that scenario, you may not have that same scenario, so not good to say, oh, I know how you feel. Also, you'll be fine. God is with you. They are feeling in that moment that this loss has changed everything about their life. When you diminish their death, you're saying that this life ultimately didn't matter enough to knock them off their game. Or it's better to say something like, I can't imagine how hard things are or what you're feeling right now, but I'm going to believe that God is going to give you grace to face every day. Also, something like, I would have loved to come to the funeral, but, and then fill in the blank. It's better to say that you were sorry that you could not come without giving an excuse. It feels like the world has stopped for them, and it feels like it should for everyone else. Okay, we're going to try this, Dan. Let's see. Okay, thank you. Come be my rescuer, because, yeah, computers. I remember feeling like this old song. I don't know if you're... It's before my time, but I do love this old song. Let's see if we could play this little snippet. I woke up that morning, I expected to open the front door and have like Armageddon being happening. It felt like my whole world had just caved in. And though I had a strong faith, it just felt like the whole world was had changed. And when you opened the door and the birds were singing and people were going to work and everything was normal to them, my whole world had changed. So yes. Also, definitely don't say this to parents. You could have more children. Most parents want to scream on something like that. Another child will not fix this grief or fill the place of that child that died. Or saying something like, well, at least now you can do X, Y, or Z. Like taking care of their long-term sick loved one was a burden. And to be put off, and now they can't have the freedom to live again. There is some relief from a long-term illness that you, if you were their caretaker, but they weren't counting the days to be relieved of that burden. Don't say things like, don't you think it's time to move on? No. Moving on feels like they're leaving their loved one behind. In grief share, we use the word maybe moving forward versus moving on. We may not even be mourning the person's death, especially, you know, if it was a long-term illness, as I said, but we're mourning our present life without them. So yes, we didn't want our loved one to be in pain any longer and be sick, but now our life is changed and different without them. And don't say, this must be God's will. This sounds like God wanted your loved one to die or give your mother cancer or was happy that your loved one died by suicide. No. Someone said, sometimes God allows what he hates to accomplish what he loves. We are learning to reckon the reality of God's providential guidance of all these things by resting in his confidence that God is working out his plan and for his creation. One of my favorite quotes is, God's sovereignty is the pillow we lay our head down.
Sorry, it was already on. Okay. Go back one. I had to stop the audio.
Okay, I have no idea.
I'll do it.
Okay, thank you. God's sovereignty is the pillow we lay our head down on at night. Sometimes we just don't know why they passed away. Just call me if you need something. Don't say, just call me if you need something. Grieving people are not up to calling you. They need you to figure out what your skill set is and just show up and do. We'll talk about this more later. Don't wait for them to call. Call them. Tell them something like, I'm going to the grocery store tomorrow. What do you need? Give me a list. I'll pick it up for you. Or call and say, I'm going to come on Thursday with my lawnmower and I'm going to mow your lawn for you. Or I'm going to come over. I had three girlfriends come in and do this. We're coming over and we're cleaning your house for you because we know you're going to have people over. And that day was super busy. I had to sign the funeral contract. There was a lot of things going on. And they all came with all the equipment, everything. And I was like, love you all, I have to leave. And I came back hours later. They had gone, not only had my house never been scrubbed so clean, they had gone as far as to take my laundry, wash them, fold them up in line and order on my bed for me to put away. I couldn't believe it. So sometimes you have to just do, because grievers can't think about what to tell people. We need to understand that if you say, call me if you need anything, that's not helpful, because sometimes people would get their feelings hurt if they weren't called when they found out later. It forces the griever to manage now this relationship and this hurt feelings, in addition to everything else they have to deal with. As one griever said, offering help without taking the initiative practically pushes that responsibility onto the griever to come up with something for them to do. Also, I wouldn't say, I guess God needed him in heaven more than we needed him here. That's a ridiculous sentiment, which trivializes the griever's sense of loss while trying to sound spiritual. God took him so that, fill in the blank. It's better to say, I know they'll never will never understand exactly why this is happening, but I'm praying that, and then you can fill in the blank. Okay, and by the way, a lot of these helpful hints are taken from Nancy Guthrie's book that we have in the bookstore, FYI, called What Grievers Wish You Knew. Okay, so this next section is called What Grievers Wish You Knew, the name of the book. And I think you have a handout for that. Number one, let the grievers take the lead. When you show up to their house, let them take the lead. They may relish the interaction with people who have come around at a difficult time. Others may be totally worn out and barely are conversant to even express themselves. Number two, don't assume that you know how they feel or are doing with their grief and the experience. You don't. There may be physical needs that they have because they were taking care of this sick person for a long time, and then they didn't pay attention to their own physical selves. Same with widows, financial needs they may have. Number three, don't compare. This is so easy, and I fall into this. It's a bad habit I have. Don't compare. We tend to compare pain. This is harder than that. Or I knew someone that had, just like you. Don't compare pain. It just all hurts. Number four, don't feel the need to fix. We humans love to fix things. And this is something that you cannot fix. Sometimes people just need to wrestle sometimes with the ugliness and uncertainty of life and their life. And it helps them to feel better when they're ready to move on. When you tell them that they're not alone and God is with them, it may make them feel worse. Like they have a spiritual problem on top of this mourning that they're doing. Like grief is, as they say in Grief Share, grief is like you have a perfectly sunny day outside. You go inside, you go in your basement, you pull the blind down, and all you see is darkness. That's what you're seeing. All I'm seeing is darkness in my grief. Nothing seems like light. Nothing. And there's a time where you just feel so disconnected from God, as if you've done something wrong, like God is doing something to you because of this. So again, the grief can be very dark. Number five, don't be in a hurry. They don't have to rush through their grief to get over. Again, same with don't try to fix it. We always want to fix things. You know, we're always telling children, oh, don't cry, because we want to fix that pain. And sometimes kids just need to cry. They're upset and they need to, again, with the tears, let that pressure cooker come out. So they don't need to get over it. For example, if they were married like I was for 32 years, what was a two-man team was now a one-man team. And it's going to take me a long time to adjust to having me do everything now. So don't be in a hurry. Number six, and don't make it about you. And again, I find myself doing this. We humans love to mentally connect, like, oh, I remember this, and when I lost my mother, this, you know, happened. Again, their scenario may be totally different. It sometimes to them may feel like less of a connection, though we're trying to connect and saying, oh, I know what you're going through. It may to them feel like less of a connection and more like one-upmanship. So be careful. Listen more than talk. Number seven, don't tell them what to do. They may need to do all the things that you're going to recommend, but they're not looking for advice, and again, not looking for you to fix it. Just say something to the fact that you never knew to hide your true feelings around me. I won't judge you, you know, on what you want to tell me. I'm safe. Tell me anything. And you don't need to fix their biblical spirituality. Sometimes in your grief, we say things really unbiblically. And when we get our head back right, we'll be okay. But right now, you're not there to fix us. So let them know that you're safe haven and they could share their feelings or cry in front of you. Number eight, just acknowledge their grief. We want the sense that that person recognizes how significant our loss is. We don't want to be dismissed and we don't want to have it minimized. Don't talk about what could be worse. This could be worse. Aren't you glad that this happened versus, no. You may say, I've had just a small taste of what it's like to go through grief. But of course, I don't presume to know what you're going through. Number nine, don't be put off by tears. You didn't make them cry. Believe me, simply the tears were already on the surface and needed to be released. Recognize that they have earned a trusted place, that they would be willing to share tears in front of you. Don't assume they need to be cheered up. Again, don't try to fix. You can say, your tears are beautiful. They reveal how beautifully you loved your husband. Or, you must have so many tears that want to come out. You can always cry with me. Also, you know, like, truly, their loved one's name is worthy of great sorrow. I say that to my grief share people all the time, that their loved one, to them, was worthy of great sorrow, and it's okay. That's one thing in Grief Share that we say, this is a place to come every week for 2 hours, and this is where you can grieve. We find in this world that people don't understand grievers. They generally want to get away from grievers. You know, we say you have 3 days bereavement and then get back to work, put that smiley face back on and don't talk about your grief. That's not how the human heart works. And so the beauty of grief share is that we've all had some kind of loss that affected our life, and that we come to a safe place, and we have tissue boxes, and I say, if you want to cry for the whole class, have at it. This is the safe place. So hopefully, if you're dealing with someone who is mourning someone, you would be that safe place too, that they would be willing to cry in front of you. Lastly, don't ask potentially painful questions out of curiosity. Don't ask if their loved one wore a seatbelt that day, or were they smoking, or were living with someone out of marriage, or even what their spiritual condition is. So be careful of that. So the quote I have here is, your tears are salve on our womb, but your silence is salt. So again, have courage, reach out to these people, and let them know that you love one. Okay, we're on this section of do something definite for them. So here's some definite things that you could do for loved ones. You could say something like, do you have any suits or dresses that need to be dry cleaned for the funeral? I'll take care of that for you. Or if your skill set is more like physical, again, say something like, how about if I mow your lawn for the whole month of September? Or I'll come over with my lawnmower next week and mow your lawn for you. Or do you need someone to take your pets? I'll come over and feed them while you're traveling to the funeral. Or say something like, I'm not rushing you, but if you would like help when you're ready to clean out their clothes from the house, I'll be willing to go there. Or if you say, if you want to go to the gravesite and visit, I'd be happy to drive you there. I had a friend who, when my husband was killed, said that and said, I'm going to go to the accident site with you. And she drove me there, and we stood and we looked at the place where that police spray paint had silhouetted the ground where my husband had been killed. And she stood there holding my hand while I might do it again. That's a true friend that's willing to do something really very uncomfortable for her. But she cared about enough about myself and my husband to say, I'm going to do something hard for you. When we hear of loss, our brain searches for like connection, as I said before, a comparison to fill that awkward silence. And we tend to blurt out the first like archive results we have, like, oh, I know a family member that had a similar blah, blah, blah. We want to demonstrate that we're familiar with the situation. To the grieving person, again, it feels like you're diminishing them or trying a one-upmanship. Better to say that we can't compare the loss, and I know you're hurting, and I'm sorry for your hurting. How about a hug, or I'll pray for you. Try not to say, which is so humanly common, how are you today? They're terrible, that's how. That's how they're going to answer, that's how they want to answer. They may say, oh, I'm fine, but that's just typical, and it's not. They're in pain, and they're feeling lousy, and they're not sleeping, and they're probably crying all day long. They're horrendous. Now, that's even with a strong faith. Gregory Lloyd has a really great book about losing his 8-year-old son, and he said, without God's presence, the darkness would be midnight black, and the grief would consume instead of just debilitate. He was a pastor, and so all of us, regardless of where your faith is, it just feels like we're knocked to our knees and our world is rocked.
Who is the author of that? I'm sorry.
Sure, Gregory Lloyd. I should have brought a list of my group. We have great books. We have a lending library at Grief Share, and there's so many. Yeah, I could definitely recommend. Most of us, you know, even with the faith, as I said, we question our faith. Why can't I feel God anymore? I can't even read my Bible. My eyes just would crisscross whenever I would try to read anything. Sometimes without the ability to, we feel like we can barely hold on to the day. It feels like you've lost your loved one without realizing that really it's God that's holding you. He was holding you up even though when you're dead weight, you feel like you're just dead weight in this particular scenario. And when you're there, you could say something like, tell me about your mother. What was she like? What's your favorite story about her? And prepare to just listen. Believe me, they want to talk about their loved one. They do. It's not a taboo subject. So as I said before, if they're crying, it's a good thing. That is their grieving process. That, as I said, releases that natural painkillers. It's okay. You didn't cause that tear. That was already there. It was underlying surface. But they want to talk about their loved one. Even though this is a typical response, I would not recommend to send flowers. Most people don't want flowers because they're going to die. And they're going to remember, more dying things or more things that I have to take care of. Or, you know, plants maybe, because they can last a long time. But again, it's one more thing that they have to take care of. Food may be better if needed, especially at the beginning when they're having, if they're having family over, if they're, you know, the ones hosting. I had my niece send me, I think it's called an edible fruit arrangement, and it's fruit in the shape of flowers, and they had a huge, huge basket just full of it. So people just came and got, and it just, it felt, you know, fun, and you put a smile on your face. So that is a really neat thing to do. Though I will say, you have to get it the day that they need it, because it's huge and you can't put it in the refrigerator. So that timing may be a little tricky, but it is a nice thing, or non-perishables to help them. Possibly think about waiting and sending meals a week from now or even later. Possibly say, may I come and bring a meal to you and stay and eat with you on such and such day? And they may be lonely. Like, as I said, people are not necessarily have these things that I'm telling you. They don't necessarily know this intuitively, so then they stay away. All of a sudden, it's really, really busy, and then quietness for after about a week, and they may be lonely. They lost their husband, their spouse, and now they're in a quiet household. So to say, hey, can I come and bring you a meal and let me just stay or have coffee with you or whatever, they may love that. If you've never met the person who, you know, maybe lost you, and you, or say something like, if I've never met that loved one, say, I can't wait to meet them in heaven. Tell me about them. I bet we would have gotten along famously had I known them. Tell me, you know, something about them. It's better to say to them, hey, they sound amazing. I wish I'd known them. Also, when we need to understand that when we say, call me if you need anything, it's not helpful, because, again, sometimes people will get their feelings hurt if you didn't call them, and then they found out later they had needs, and they're like, why didn't you call me? And now they're basically pushing the responsibility to that other person. So some ideas on what to do when you show up. Listen more than talk. Before, as I said, let the other person lead. If they want to talk, let them. If they don't want to talk, that's okay too. Just let things go. Even if it doesn't sound, as I say, biblical, right? It doesn't even sound kind. It's the grief talking. What they are doing is what we call lamenting to God. Dr. Larry Crabtree says that we are telling God, hey, let me tell you what's going on with my world now. And God doesn't need to be told. He already knows. But this is what, when we cry to the Lord, what this means. It's not our job to school someone during this mourning time, even when it doesn't sound biblically right. It's the grief talking. Weep with them. It's okay to cry. It's okay to laugh too. If they're laughing about a funny incident, laugh with them. And especially if you have a funny story to tell. Maybe you never have told this story about your loved one. Somebody came to the funeral and told me the story, and I was like, oh my word, I had no idea. My husband had been sending birthday gifts to all of his coworkers. Now, He didn't send birthday cards to his brothers and sisters or anything, but he did those little things, and they came and told me that. There was like a whole group of them surrounding me to have to tell me about the gifts that he sent them. Like, he really figured them out, and I was like blown away. It's like, who are you talking about? You know, it just, so they have a hidden little story. So if you have a funny story to tell about them, tell them. That person will love to hear it. You're not making light of their death if you have a funny story. As they say, shared joy is double the joy, and shared sorrow is half the sorrow. It's okay to leave a message on their phone if they don't pick up. Be sure it's of love and support and remembrance, but add something like, please don't feel obligated to call me back. I just wanted to say I love you, I'm praying for you, or whatever. One day I had to go out for chores, and I am not making this up. When I came home in the machine, there was 52 messages of love and support from my church family, my friends. It was a blessing. I felt like I had an ocean of love, you know, enwrapping me. Now, do you think I could call 52 people back? And they, no. So just say, please don't feel obligated to call me back. I just wanted to call you. Okay. I think we're off on the pictures. Mm-hmm. After the visit, send a note, and then another the next week, and then another after that. Don't just stop, because that's what happens. Everybody's busy at the funeral, and then maybe a day or so after, and then it just gets silent. So try to put off a week, send a card, and then another card, and another card. Go through your photos and share any, if you have, of their loved one. They would love to see new photos. They have all the photos, and they're looking. They may or may not be looking through their photos that they have, but if you have a new one, they would love to see that. Bring food or start a call to friends to schedule food, bringing them in the coming weeks. Generally, if they're involved like in a church family, they would get all the, you know, media within a week or whatever, but put off a week or two. That would help. Also, you could bring basic supplies that they have not had time to get, like even toilet paper and paper towels, paper plates for people who just come in. Tell them it's okay that not, you know, don't use your regular dishes. Use the paper products. It's okay. Consider the children in the family. Take them out so the parents have time to go do errands at the funeral home or to get their hair done or just to take a nap if they can. If you're financially able and you were aware of maybe a special cause, donate funds to that cause that the loved one supported in their name. As long as it's not, you know, something, I don't know what, against your conscience, donate in their name. I donated to numerous, my husband's family were missionaries for over 20 years, and he was born in Africa, and I donated in his name to numerous missionaries after he passed away. And so, anyhow, think about if this person is a widow or a widower, that they may never have had to do something before, like an elderly widower may not have had to be in charge of cooking. A lot of men don't cook, and now they don't know what to do with that stove. Or they've never, you know, grocery shopped or done the laundry. Offer your services to him for a meal for a week. Or for a widow, offer to pick her up and drive her to church or to a hair appointment or doctor's appointment if she's not driving any longer. One help to your friend is to mention, not within the first weeks, I wouldn't, that IBC has a grief share program. And you'd be happy to drive them. Say, you know, I'd be happy to go with you for the first couple weeks and sit with you till you get comfortable. Or tell them that they'll be surrounded by and supported by a group of grievers that are not afraid of tears and fears and anxiety and anger and questions and frustrations over our loved one's death. And so I have some flyers of the new Grief Share program that starts the second week of September. Again, don't be in a hurry for them to get over it. we would not tell someone who had a physical injury to get over that pain or to hurry up and get off those crutches. You know, why do we do that with emotional healing? We wonder when they're going to smile again and to be fun-loving again and be interested in the things they used to love doing. And yes, it's true, we desire for the griever to be back to their old self. Purely out of love, we don't want them to be in pain. But it may also be out of selfishness because it makes us uncomfortable to be around them because they're sad. So again, don't try to fix them. We can't fix this. Just be patient for the long haul. That's what Christians do. We die into ourselves. So very quickly, that's in your book, our booklet. What to do for grieving people. Very easy things. Just show up. Do something for them. Don't ask. Just do. Now, they're a total stranger. Obviously, you're not going to show up at their house and start cleaning. These are people I'm talking about that you know. And again, they're not going to have the mindset of, I know she could do this. I'll have her do this. I know he could do it. They can't think right now. So just show up and do. Number two, don't compare their loss to yours or to others. Acknowledge their loss. Use their loved one's name. They love to talk about their loved one's name. They still want to talk, number three, about their loss. So use their loved one's name. Fourthly, they need time and space to be sad. You will be that person that won't rush them through because you've learned that here in this class. Don't rush them through. Okay, so I have asked some of my former grief share people, participants to come up here, if you don't mind. And I'm going to ask them some questions. And while they're doing that, does anybody have any questions for me? I don't know that I can answer, but I'll try. Yes, lady in the blue shirt.
How can we? I'm Jackie.
Jackie.
How can we get a list of those references from you, or
from you? Which references that I read?
The book, so the resources.
Okay, absolutely. See me afterwards. I'll get your email, and then I'll send it to you. Okay. Yes.
I noticed that some people's handouts did not have your outline.
Oh, really?
So do you want to give them your IBC address and we can get it to them?
Absolutely, yeah. I'll take everybody's email who wants to give it to me.
Or give them yours and then...
Yeah, okay.
Do you have a piece of paper and we can just pass it around so you're not bombarded at the end?
No, no problem. Yeah, grab something over there. Who knows what I have. I have, right. Sir?
I don't really have a question. I have a comment. I am currently losing my wife a day at a time with Alzheimer's. She's in a memory care facility and losing it.
Right.
Okay. And it's just, you may want to mention this in your class. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to know how she's doing.
Right.
Especially here at Emmanuel, because I've been at Emmanuel for 10 years. Everybody wants to know how she's doing.
Right.
Nobody, with the exception of one person who just happens to be in this room, wants to know how I'm doing.
Right.
So you might want to throw that into your
That's curriculum. Excellent. One thing that we talk about in Grief Share, and there's a whole class, and last year I taught this same class, but I called it Miserable Comforters, the silly things that people say, that when you're grieving, one thing you have to learn to do is forgive others. Because they will say some really dumb things, and we're going to bring that up in the panel thing.
I'm not saying that's bad.
No, I know. But I'm just saying is we do that, you know, when we have some expectation of, hey, don't they care for me too? You know, the first thing is we equate your wife with, you know, having an illness or be sick. So then we ask about the person.
There is no get better.
Right, totally.
From dementia.
Exactly.
You don't get better.
Right.
You just eventually die.
And so she's comfortable. You know, you can answer if she's comfortable. But yes, we get neglected because they talk about, you know, the grief or the person. And so, yeah, sometimes we just have to forgive and say, okay, they didn't care about me, but they want to, you know. So. It happens.
I'm not saying that they don't care.
I know.
They just never mention it.
So we all have that awkward silence when we come and talk to someone. or we run down the other hallway because we see them coming and we don't know what to say. And so this is sort of why I taught this class. Maybe not, you know, maybe it'll help you in some way. In the very last page, I hope you got it if you had the thing. It's called Things to Say in Cards and Purposeful Scriptures. Hopefully you have that. That may help you, you know, word it however you word it, but that just may help a little bit. And so, we all have that humanity that we want to connect, but we don't always know what to say. And so just say that. I don't know what to say to you. I love you, though, and I'm praying for God's grace in your life right now because you can't fix it. Again, you're trying to fix it just by saying, I love you, but you can't. Teresa, did you have a question?
Yeah, I have something to say. It's okay. Also, I'm new here to the church, and it's hard to reach out to people. He happens to be in the class that I'm in.
Okay.
You don't know people.
Right.
But if you're a caring person, you don't know where to begin.
Right.
Let somebody in. Everybody seems to stay with who they know.
True.
And then when new people come, you just feel lost. And then you feel like, I feel like you have to prove yourself. And I'm not going to prove myself. I'm just going to be myself.
Right. I gotcha. Yeah. So, again, sometimes when we're in a situation and they're like, oh no, here they come again, and they're, you know, their husband's sick or their wife's sick or whatever, oh, they don't know what to say. So then they avoid, and they don't say anything. And so, like I said, that one saying about the tears are, your tears are salve on our wound, but silence is like salt. So just say anything, not just show you care, just be real. You know, just say, can I pray for you today? Can I pray right now? Or how, you know, like a hug. Obviously, you want to, you know, whatever. You got to be wise about that. But
that one person that I talked about who happens to be in this room did that for me, and it meant the world to me.
There we go. We just want that connection, and we don't know what to say, you know, especially if you've never had, you know, maybe very much death or people passing away that you know. So just being there and I love you, praying, you know, God's grace for you, yeah, can mean the world to them. Okay, grievers, or previous participant grievers, wasn't I got a list? Okay, so what I'm going to have them do is, and if you all could speak up, I know everybody thinks everybody can hear, but this room feels weird to me, like it has an acoustic weirdness. I can hear myself like right here, but I don't know if you're hearing me. I assume like you have. So I'm going to have you introduce yourself and what brought you to a grief share, okay? I'm going to start down at the end with James, and then we'll work our way up, and then we'll do a second question and keep going like that. Okay, James?
Okay, I'm James, and it's the loss of our 17-year-old daughter, Victoria.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mimi. My only sibling and older sister died of breast cancer 2 years ago in Farm Eyes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Melanie?
And hi, I'm Melanie. She talked about speaking up because it was me. I have the softest voice. But I came to grief share because of the loss of two matriarchs in my family within the year. One died, then the next one died. And then the loss of my mom, and then always in the back was the death of my 19-year-old son.
Thank you. Veronica?
I'm Veronica, and I came to grief share almost 2 years ago with my husband, James. Our daughter, Victoria, died suddenly at age 17. We found her in her bedroom.
Thank you. Neil?
My name is Neil Auslin. My father passed away in June of 2017, and I've been to grief share several times.
Thank you. So, as you can see, we have a wide variety of the reasons why they come to grief share. You don't come to grief share just because you lost a husband or a wife. You come to grief share because this has rocked your world, and you don't know where to go. You just went out of your pain. And the first thing, one of the first things I say is, I don't have grief share pixie dust. You're not going to leave this class out of pain. You have to go through your grieving process. Nobody wants to hear that. And as we say, nobody wants to be a member of the group of grievers. And so nobody wants to be part of this club. But we have a wide variety of grievers at GriefShare, some that have lost their loved ones recently, and some that are realizing they never dealt with their grief and have lost a loved one a long time ago. We have men, we have women, so there is no right or wrong reason why to come to GriefShare. Okay, secondly, grievers, can you briefly give an example of someone that may have tried to say something nice or comforting to you, but instead it was painful? Neil, are you able to start?
Yeah, you pretty much covered this in your presentation, but I mean, a lot of people, when I initially started grieving, was they said everything's going to be all right. And it's just, it's still, even though it's been 7 years, it still rocks my world.
Right.
Because it's still, it's a hard thing to deal with. So.
Right. It's not who it was. It was who it was to you that the reason they're in GriefShare. It's not that it was, you know, a mother. It could be anyone, your best friend, a cousin. It doesn't matter. It's who it was to you that has changed your world. Okay, Veronica, you?
Same question.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after Victoria passed away, it was probably within 24, 48 hours, the grandmother of my stepdaughters was over at the house. And I guess about 20 years prior, she had experienced the loss of like a 2-year-old grandson. So she must have been assuming that she knew how I felt, and what she had felt was obviously, you know, deep grief, but with a very negative tone to it, because she sat there and she told me about how when Jaden died, she lost all faith in God, and that's just the way it is. And I could tell she was trying to, like, relate to me somehow, like, this is so terrible. But I felt like that was the saddest thing I had ever heard, because the only connection I had now to my child was through God. Why would I want to lose faith in that? So.
And didn't you tell me, I'm trying to remember, didn't you tell me that your mother, like, got up and left? In the middle of
the burial
ceremony. Yeah. What did she say?
I said, Mom, where are you going? And she said, oh, this is just too painful. I have to go.
And we all grieve differently, but this is, you know, we want to be there for them. And if it's not painful for her, this is typical of GriefShare. Tears may come when we talk about this. Some things people say are painful. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Okay, Melanie?
A couple of things, but one, a friend came over, and for 45 minutes, they told me about how my loss reminded me of their loss. And for 45 minutes, they told me about the loss of their mom. And so I had to sit back, and I said, you know, it was a time, it was just grace and forgiveness, because they were killing me with their words. But I said, Lord, I guess this time they need to be comforted instead of comforting me. And I just, I remember that because I had to come out of myself to be the person that they needed. But it was about them. And then other times people have, it's like an interrogation. They seem to want to know more about what happened than where my heart is. My heart is bleeding, and you want to know when, where, how, and, you know, no. I needed someone to be there, to listen, to be patient with me, to comfort me, not rush me. And their ministries, you know, there's a ministry, I think, of just the touch and the kindness in your eye and just be willing to sit in someone's pain. That's what I needed. And then the other thing is that sometimes people would give me these wonderful Bible verses, but it was just too fast. I needed the Bible verses, but I needed for them, I wanted them to sit there with me for that 5 or 10 minutes and hear me, just hear me cry out to the Lord. And then Sandy gave it one way, but another way someone blessed me by doing, they said, "My Lord, her heart is bleeding right now." And this was in a prayer. "My Lord, her heart is bleeding right now. She doesn't know where to go. She's angry. She, you know, she's just in so much pain. My Lord, will you show yourself to be the God of comfort?" So they brought the Lord in to comfort me, but they also let me know, I heard and I saw you were hurt, and I'm going to be there with you, and I'm not going to run away, and God's not going to run away.
Excellent. Mimi, what about you? Someone said something painful?
Yeah, lots of people.
Mimi has always been our comic relief. She's so much fun.
So my sister who passed lived in Canada. And so people said, but she was all the way there. And you're here. Of course, I did go many times to see her. But this was my sister who was only 10 months older than me. I never knew life without her. You know, she died at 52. And they would be like, but she's all the way there. Think of her daughter and think of her husband. Mm-hmm. And they did the whole comparison. But this was somebody that was my best friend, my closest person. So the comparison, and then, you know, she's far. Like
she's far, so it shouldn't be as painful.
So it shouldn't be as painful.
Right.
So, yes, a lot of things. Can I address what Teresa was saying?
Absolutely.
So you're right. People don't include people, especially in grief. And I say that, and Sandy knows I talk too much. But I don't have family in the country. I grew up in India. No family. And here's my sister, the only sister that passed away in Toronto, right? So people don't include you. And as far away as they can go, they will go. And I'm a touchy-feely, huggy person, and like the gentleman behind you was saying, a hug means the world. Now, you don't want to hug everybody. You want to ask them. But I never got that, you know? But there was one lady in our grief share, and she had lost her mother. Now I'm going to take her name, but she said, you know, I know I'm in my 60s and my mother was in her 80s and she died. I want to go to a restaurant that my mother used to love to go. Nobody will go with me because they expect, well, you know, she was in her 80s. Like, you know, this is something you really should, you know. Like, and I have told her, I'll go with you. You know, you don't need to buy me wings, nothing. That's what you're gonna do. But I'll go with you. You know, which people thought was so odd. Well, why would you? We don't know this person. I mean, she came to a grief share class. Again, nobody wants to include. And that's what you want. You want to be included at that time. And it's really hard. It's very hard. So.
Excellent. Excellent. James, what about you?
Well, I guess I wrote down some coworkers didn't acknowledge my loss. Did not say anything. Just kind of walked back to business as usual. Mm-hmm. That kind of bothered me. But early on, like the first couple of days, we had people coming in, family coming in, and it was said by my stepdaughter's, oldest stepdaughter's boyfriend, this is all about Miss Veronica. And that was sort of like, it bothered me.
It's all about your wife. Yeah, earlier, not just about you. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Like the father's feelings don't matter. It's all about the wife. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have a miserable comforter story. I have one sister who's a believer, and she lived in Centerville, and we're all in the D.C. area, but when my husband died, like every week, I went to visit my sister in Centerville. You know, I just needed to be around family. And one time, I don't know if I was upset, I don't remember, but my brother-in-law said, "Well, don't you worry, you're such a nice Christian lady, you'll be married before you know it, someone will, you know, whatever." And I'm like, have you lost your mind? This is probably within about a month or so of my husband's death. I'm like, have you forgotten, Peter? Why would I ever, you know, within a month? So now, prophetically, he was right. I eventually remarried 2 years ago. But you don't say that. You don't say that something or somebody else is going to fill that person's void. That person, no matter who it is, was that person to you, no matter what that connection is. So no matter what, nothing is going to fill that void of that person. As I say in Grief Share, God has specifically given you that person as a gift. You will never be able to recreate another relationship like this person. This is your gift that he gave you. And we talk about in Grief Share for how many years? What's your number? 32 years for me. He gave me my husband for 32 years. 17 for you. Whatever it is. God gives us that gift for a short amount of time. And we're learning to be thankful for that number. Obviously, we want her to be 100. But this is the gift that God has given us for the short amount of time as we learn to be focusing on that. Okay, excellent. Number three question, Neil. Can you describe someone or how someone helped you in your grief?
Well, I'm blessed to have a lot of friends, a lot of single friends, but there's one friend in particular that always likes to include me with things and gets me out of the house.
There we go.
Invites me to things. So that's been a real blessing.
Excellent. Thank you. All right, Veronica?
It would be my coworker Janice at the office. She's like right on the corner for me. Just before, 3 days before Victoria died, Janice's husband went in for a heart transplant. So, we were already close friends, and at that time, I was being emotional support to her because she didn't know if her husband was going to die. And so, it was like we had become very close. I was checking in on her all the time, and immediately once, and again it was sudden, once Victoria died, the roles reversed. I mean, her husband was in the hospital, but she was checking on me.
You had that bond, unfortunately.
And
it's good.
And very, very prominent in our minds about how you never know what's happening in life.
Right.
Here we were thinking that she was going to lose someone, and I'm the person who lost them.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
It's 2 years later, her husband's doing great.
So is
Yeah. Oh my.
Melanie, what about you? Someone who helped you immensely with your grief?
I belong to a small church in California, and they tripped over one another. I had to be there for me. I had to say stop, because they anticipated what I might need, and they were there on the spot. And one of them, Marjorie, the day, and I'm now thinking about the day my son died, Marjorie was there with a single notebook, just a single book, and she stayed with me, and she took down every phone call, made a list of all the gifts that came in, the inquiries, everything in this one book, and organized everything for me. If I hadn't been for that lady, my mind just wasn't there. So I think of her. And then Bell Olson, another friend who, I didn't tell you Dell, Dell anticipated that something she could do to help me now, but later in like 6 months down the road, she said, no, now she can smile. And now she started approaching me a little bit differently. One of the great gifts that these people gave me was that I remember one of them saying to me, Melanie, I'm going to call you every day. You don't have to answer the phone. I just want you to know when you see the phone call come in, it's me thinking about you and praying for you. You don't have to answer the phone. And I felt I wasn't alone.
Okay.
And it's a lonely place
Thank you. All right, Mimi, what about you? Someone or something that helped you immensely with your grief?
I think grief shift was the only thing that saved me, because without family and the only sibling passing away, and I'm a single parent of two teenagers by myself, it was a lot. I'm the one who had to let my parents know that their daughter had passed. So now I'm stuck in between these two generations with no local friends either. Again, people fall off when you're in grief. So I was desperate for human connection, and that's when I found Grief Share. And I think that group and being able to talk, express, laugh, joke was the only thing that helped. And like I said, I'm a touchy-feely, huggy person, so I just go hug people at the end of the class. I don't think everybody appreciated it, but for me it was healing. Mm-hmm. So whenever I left Grief Share, even though it's heavy because you kind of feel other people's pain, I was like, okay, good. I have another. At least I can see them again next week. You know, it literally was my survival mode. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can absolutely say that this was a Thursday night. It was my thing. I knew people were compassionate. I could cry. I could say stuff. So for me, it was Grief Share. I mean, there wasn't any single person. I had to worry about kids at home, parents in India. It was too much. But here, I could say, you know what, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And people would say inappropriate stuff, so I got a T-shirt made. I didn't want to wear that one. Inappropriate in a church, so I didn't wear it. And the T-shirt says, talk to me in 2035. Because people would just say the most inappropriate stuff, and I usually like to answer people back, and I didn't want to do that. Because you can say stuff in grief that regret later. So I would just have this T-shirt on and people will try not to say stuff. But Grief Share is the only thing that has helped me in the last 2 years. It's about to be 2 years since my sister passed. So.
That's so great. James, what about you?
Well, same scenario with maybe. I just look forward to coming to Grief Share once a week. It's something that we look forward to. So it's like... what was helpful in the first year was my wife, because I had my wife and coming to Grief Share.
It's hard weekly to say, okay, now I'm going to, now nobody is ever forced to speak during Grief Share, but I'm going to expose myself again to these people. But what happens is like you said, you finally have a time that I can finally talk about my loved one, and nobody is going to say, oh, that again, oh, there she goes again, or you know, whatever. So you get to the point where, yes, you do look forward to this little mini family that we make in Grief Share, because we're going through the same, not necessarily scenarios, different relationships, but the same grief fog and the grief ambush. So definitely, I watched the time. Oh, it's a property. Okay. So
plenty of tissues.
Plenty of tissues. So quickly, the last questions. What advice would you give to those in the audience to do for grievers in one sentence? Neil?
Well, I mean, most of my friends are Christians, so I'm coming at this from a Christian perspective.
Right.
I would say have faith in God.
Okay, have faith in God.
Basically, I mean, despite all my problems with grief, with grieving,
yes,
God has kept me persevered, and God kept part of God's moving through.
Right, so just continue your faith as hard as it can be. Excellent. Okay, Veronica, what about you?
Okay, just be mindful that the person's probably grieving a lot longer than you anticipate. So, you know, even at the 6 month mark or the year mark, you know, offer them a casserole then.
Yes, right. There is no date on grief. Right.
I mean, it's been 2 years, and you know, James and I are just finally being able to be serious enough about meal planning. That's 2 years.
Yeah. There's time. Yeah.
Switching from the microwave to the stove.
Okay. Melanie, what about you?
Pray for me. Keep praying for us.
Yeah.
If you see us on Sunday, it doesn't mean our hearts aren't still hurting. And this goes over the years and over a period of time. Show us grace and remember us in prayer.
Excellent. All right, Mimi?
Well, there's too much wisdom here. I'm not enough. What I would say is ask the person if there's something they want to go do. And there was somebody asked, I said, do you want to go watch a movie? You know, listen to music, eat something, just to have that distraction. Because nobody else is going to go with them. They're going to assume they're grieving, they don't want to go out. And sometimes just a movie's great. Or something, whatever they want to do.
Right.
So, you know, ask, especially their interest, right? And a friend of mine, well, more a colleague, said, you know what, I just want to go to a winery and walk around. It's comforting. Because there was a connection with the person they lost. I went and walked with her. I mean, it's not something I would do, mm-hmm. but it's something they actually enjoy doing. Something out of the ordinary or something that gives them an actual distraction might help.
Absolutely. Just to offer, no force. All right, James?
This is the last question, right?
Yes. Yeah, well, what advice would you give those, the audience, about grievers to be a blessing? Yes.
Just to be available and listen and be present. To check in periodically for a few years.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
It's okay for the person who's grieving. It's okay to say, "It's not a, today is not good."
Right.
This is not a good day. It's
right.
Okay to be honest with people.
Yes, we say that a lot in group share, and that it's okay to say, "I'm really struggling. Pray for me," or "Give me a hug," or, you know.
Yeah,
you know, the obvious answer for how are you may not be the actual truth. About, oh yes, I'm fine. No, it may not be fine. So you're right. Even after 2 years, there's some days that something reminded you of that person, and now you're back in your original grief.
But Sandy, remember I offered the hotline that I could call people and say, no, don't bother them. Because
yeah.
it's hard for people to say no to their relatives or to say it is a bad day today.
Mm-hmm.
But I offered, I could set up a hotline and call on your behalf and tell them, please don't disturb them today. It's not a day for them.
You know?
Yeah.
It's okay to be
But it's hard to say that if they're
yes.
calling. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. It's hard to say, hey, it's not good today.
It's not good.
It's not, you don't know how you feel.
Is it better to call them on a good day or a bad day?
Well, again, you don't know when that is, and they don't either. You don't either. So the point is you're making a connection. You're willing to do it, and that you care. You know, hey, I'm just calling today. I'm praying for you today. The Lord brought you to my mind today. I'm praying for you today. And again, leave that message. You know, there's no right or wrong. There is more sensitive versus insensitive. So, you know, be careful of that. So hopefully, I know I felt like I just was like exploding with information. Hopefully something today that I said give you a little bit of help. And again, we do have a grief share program. We have flyers to pick up if you feel like yourself or someone in your family or acquaintances are struggling with grief. We're a good group to be in, and we would love to have you. Thank you so much. Yeah.
I liked how you said that about calling, leaving a message, and saying there's no pressure to call.
Don't
back.
Call me back. I know you're busy.
Because I've texted someone that's grieving, and I'll just say, I'm praying for you.
Right.
And whether or not that person responded back, that's totally, it allows them the freedom to respond back to my text.
Right.
Or not, but I've conveyed to them that I'm praying for them.
Yes, there we go. I say phone call, but everybody texts, you know, and emails, you know, nowadays. And you know, our grandmothers would not like that, and a nice letter, and, you know, that's just not how it is nowadays. Texting and calling and emailing is okay. They don't have to react to it, sir.
The announcement in the bulletin says that grief share is for people who have lost someone in death, end quote. So, even though I, you know.
Oh, did you come? Yes. Now we do, you know, we do talk about finalities, but you're more than welcome to come. I had my elderly aunt had Alzheimer's live with me for 2.5 years, so you're almost saying goodbye every day. You don't know.
Precisely.
You know, and,
precisely.
Yes, and so you're more than welcome to come because you're grieving that relationship. Is not no longer with you, and hasn't been maybe. So you're more than welcome to come. So yes, we do talk about grief and death, but there have been others that have come before they died. So, you know, when we ask certain questions about death, you may not be able to answer that, but that's okay. You know, again, nobody's ever forced to speak at grief share, and yeah, so totally welcome. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming, and I pray that this will help you and you'll be a blessing to others. Thank you. Yeah.